Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution. Hello, and welcome to ID the Future. I'm Annika Smith, and on this episode of IDTF, we're featuring an excerpt from an Academic Freedom Day celebration talk given by Casey Luskin at the University of Arkansas. The talk is titled, The Positive Case for Intelligent Design and Why It's Being Expelled from Academia. And in this first of two parts, Casey Luskin gives two positive, testable predictions of ID that are confirmed by the empirical data.
Let's get into the fun stuff. Four testable predictions of intelligent design. I'm going to give four testable predictions, and each of these will use the scientific method to make this prediction and then to test it and then see whether ID is a valid explanation for this data. So we'll start off with ID and biochemistry. We'll start with an observation about how intelligent agents operate. Stephen Meyer has written that agents can arrange matter with distinct goals in mind. In their use of language, they routinely find isolated and improbable functional sequences amid vast spaces of combinatorial possibilities. What is he saying? He's saying that intelligence is capable of thinking with an end goal in mind. They're capable of coming up with complex solutions to problems that require specific solutions, and they're able to assemble large number of parts together to think with the end goal in mind and envision a solution without having to take sort of a step-by-step process that can only look one small step ahead. Intelligent agents are capable of looking far ahead and finding the solution, in contrast with Darwinian selection, which can only take what you've got and look one small mutational step ahead and then see if that gives you an advantage or some kind of a function. An island in a sea of non-functionality, and intelligent agents are capable of finding those islands quite quickly, actually. So again, our experience-based knowledge of information flow confirms that systems with large amounts of specified complexity, especially codes and languages, invariably originate from an intelligent source, from a mind or personal agent. So this testable prediction is that highly specified and irreducibly complex machine-like structures will be found in biology. That's a testable prediction of ID. It turns out that life is based upon highly specified information-based codes and languages and machines. The genetic code, our DNA, is based upon a biochemical language of four nucleotide bases that are arranged along the backbone of the DNA, adenine, cytosine, thymine, and guanine. They're given by the letters A, T, C, and G, as we probably all learned in high school biology. And there is no physical or chemical law that dictates the exact order that these bases have to be in our DNA. So what orders them? We have to come up with some kind of a cause that orders the DNA. Well, as I said earlier, the order of these nucleotide bases determines the amino acid sequence in a protein and dictates whether a protein will be functional. And if there's only very rare particular sequences that allow for a functional protein, then we're looking at very high levels of specified and complex information encoded along the backbone of the DNA molecule. So life is based upon a biochemical language and very high levels of complex and specified information. It's not just enough, though, to have this information sitting in the DNA. If I had a CD-ROM here, having the CD-ROM alone is not going to do me any good. I have to have some kind of a computer that can take the information in the CD-ROM and process it and turn it into some kind of a functional program. And our cells function like computers to convert the information in DNA into proteins. And this information conversion process is basically a code conversion process, going from the 4-character code of DNA, or you could say the 64 triplet code, to the 20-character code of amino acids and proteins. And this is an information processing system which some leading thinkers have compared to the same way that computers convert information into some kind of a function. Bill Gates, no friend of intelligent design. This is Blue Screen of Death. If you're a Windows user, you've probably seen these before. I've had plenty of them. I used to own a Sony Vaio, so I know these intimately well. Bill Gates says that DNA is like a computer program, but far, far more advanced than any we've ever created. Why is DNA like a computer program? It's because the biochemical language of DNA contains commands and codes. They tell your cell when to produce a protein, how much of it to produce, when to start producing it, what amino acids to string along into the protein, when to stop producing the protein. And there's more codes in the DNA that we're just beginning to uncover, actually. So DNA is a system of commands and codes which in many respects resembles computer code. And even Richard Dawkins has recognized this. He says that the machine code of the genes is uncannily computer-like. Apart from differences in jargon, the pages of a molecular biology journal might be interchanged with those of a computer engineering journal. Dawkins, obviously no fan of ID, but I think this is a very significant observation. that there is a computer-like system of commands and codes that is built into our cell. It's an information processing system. In our experience, where does information processing come from? Well, I only know of one source of information processing systems, and that is intelligent design or code conversion processes. I only know of one source for that, intelligence. Now, it's not just significant that there is encoded language that underlies all of life, and then it's converted into proteins using a computer-like system of commands and codes. Let's look at the actual protein products of this transcription and translation process that goes on in our cells. This is the bacterial flagellum. Many of you know it well. If you follow ID, it's become the poster child of ID. It's still a great example, although there are, you know, hundreds, if not thousands, of biomolecular machines in our bodies. The bottom line is that micromolecular machines are the product of this information processing system, and they are what form the parts that make up our cell. And in many respects, some of these machines resemble human design machines. The flagellum is a great example. It's basically a propeller on the back of a bacterium that propels it through a liquid medium to find some kind of a food source, and it has parts that we recognize from human design machines. It has a rotor, it has a stator, it has bearings, it has a U-joint, it has a hook, it has a propeller, which is the filament. It's even been discovered in the last couple years that there are flagella that have a clutch and a brake, and the efficiency of this little machine is incredible. I'm told that it can spin up to 100,000 RPM, that it can stop in a quarter of a turn in reverse directions, and it resembles, in many respects, the human-designed rotary engine. Long before we knew anything about biological machines, humans had already come up with a rotary engine, and the bacterial flagellum basically functions very much, its design is very similar to a rotary engine. But why is it an argument for design? I mean, I can make these analogies. It's an argument for design because there have been genetic knockout experiments performed on the flagellum where basically you take every one of its 35 or so genes, mutate it so it doesn't work anymore, and one at a time go through and ask, does it need every one of its genes in order to function? And these genetic knockout experiments have shown that yes, if you do genetic knockout tests on the flagellum, it does in fact require all of its approximately 35 or so genes to function. All complexity must be present. This is what ID proponents call irreducible complexity. If you reduce the complexity, it doesn't work. So the complexity is irreducible, and this meets a challenge from Darwin that you build things under Darwinian evolution using numerous successive slight modifications. But how are you going to build a machine that requires many parts present all at once in order to function through numerous successive slight modifications? And I know the common objections, and maybe we'll get into some of that during the Q&A, and I look forward to talking about that. But the bottom line is that as far as the empirical tests go, ID proponents have done research and found that the flagellum shows signs of irreducible complexity. A final example of very high levels of specified complexity comes from the laws of nature, the laws of and constants of physics to allow for the existence of advanced life. And I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this tonight. Many of the physical parameters of our universe appear to be very finely tuned to allow for the existence of advanced life. And if you were to change them slightly, we could not get advanced life or even any life at all. So, for example, if you were to increase the strength of the weak nuclear force or decrease it just a little bit, you would not be able to get the kind of bonding that is necessary for life. One of the most impressive examples of fine-tuning of the laws of nature is the initial entropy of the universe. The initial entropy of the universe is finely tuned to within 1 part in 10 raised to the exponent of 10 to the 123rd power. So that's 10 with 10 to the 123rd zeros after it. We don't even have names for those kinds of numbers. Basically, the fine-tuning of the universe shows an incredible example of specified complexity and that there's a very unlikely configuration of the physical laws and constants of the universe that conform to what is necessary to get advanced life or perhaps even just any kind of life. Sir Fred Hoyle, an atheist cosmologist, says that a common-sense interpretation of the data suggests that a super-intellect has monkeyed with physics as well as with chemistry and biology. And I think this is very significant. So I think ID passes the first prediction, that we're going to find high levels of specified complexity in nature. What's the second prediction? All right, ID and systematics. Systematics is studying the relationships of living organisms. Evolutionary trees, phylogenetic trees, bioinformatics are people who are involved in the field of systematics, trying to explain how organisms are related to one another. ID proponents Paul Nelson and Jonathan Wells have said that an intelligent cause may reuse or redeploy the same module in different systems without there necessarily being any material or physical connection between those systems. Even more simply, intelligent causes can generate identical patterns independently. We do so, for instance, every time we sign a bank check or a credit card slip. So what's an example of how intelligent agents reuse parts that work in different designs? Well, we reuse wheels in both cars and airplanes, or reuse keyboards in both cell phones and computers. If you're a computer programmer, computer programmers will regularly reuse programming modules in different programs rather than starting from scratch. And sometimes this gets them into trouble where they steal code. Hopefully the code they're borrowing is the intellectual property of their own company. But the bottom line is that intelligent agents will regularly reuse parts that work in different designs. And so this allows us to make a testable prediction that genes and other functional parts will be reused in widely different organisms. And this is a prediction that I think is absolutely found. And let's talk a little bit about what we find in biology and how evolutionary biology works. Well, the main assumption of evolutionary phylogenetic trees is this. This is the primary assumption. When it fails, they go to backup explanations, ad hoc rationalizations to save common descent, like convergent evolution or lateral gene transfer or differing rates of evolution. But the bottom line is that the base assumption of phylogenetic trees is that similarity is the result of inheritance from a common ancestry. This is also known as homology. It's an assumption. It's just an assumption. Let me show you why. Similarities in vertebrate limbs. If any of you have a biology textbook, you've seen a diagram probably just like this. It says that the bones in the vertebrate limb have a similar pattern and that this is the result of inheritance from a common ancestor. So what I would argue that, yes, I mean, common descent is one possible explanation for this. But remember, my argument for design is not merely based upon the refutation of evolution. So while common descent might explain this, I would also argue that common design is another good explanation for this. Maybe there are good functional reasons for reusing this common bone structure in different vertebrates. The textbook Explore Evolution actually has an interesting discussion of how if you were to change a certain aspects of this bone structure, you wouldn't get the same mobility that we see in vertebrate limbs. What about reusage of different skeletal plans in distantly related mammals? This is the skull of a marsupial cat and a placental cat. Marsupials and placentals are two basic types of mammals. There's also monotremes. Marsupial and placental mammals, common ancestors, supposedly a little rodent-like thing that lived about 125 million years ago. Yet they have independently evolved into a number of highly similar forms. And you can see in this example that the skulls of these two different types of cats, whose common ancestor was supposedly a little rat-like thing over 100 million years ago, these are extremely similar. So what happens when we see extreme cases of what evolutionists would call convergent evolution? So is this best explained by common descent or common design? The evolutionists would say that it's not the result of inheritance from common ancestor, it's the result of convergent evolution. But I would say, what are the odds of independently evolving such highly similar structures? I think this is very low, and I think that common design is a much more compelling and elegant explanation for these kinds of examples of extreme convergent evolution. What about at the genetic level? As we study genes more and more, we're actually finding examples of convergent evolution at the genetic level. This is very striking. Homology in animal limb genes. The gene distal less regulates limb growth in many animals, ranging from vertebrates to arthropods to echinoderms. There's a problem, though, in that it's not thought that the common ancestor of these different types of organisms had a common type of limb, or maybe even necessarily had limbs. Perhaps there's a way to account for this through evolutionary thinking, but this is either an example of extreme convergent evolution or common design. I think this is very interesting evidence. This is the kind of evidence that ID would lead us to predict. There's some very interesting examples of genes popping up in places where we would not expect them. And that leads to a problem. What happens when we find genes popping up in places where common descent would not lead us to expect them? Well, the tree of life turns into a tangled thicket or a tangled bush. So many evolutionists would argue that the base of the tree of life is not a tree at all. It's actually a very tangled thicket. And they would argue that this is the result of swapping of genes among microorganisms, lateral gene transfer. We do observe that bacteria swap genes. That's fine. So perhaps we can account for why, when you look at the different types of genes in these basic divisions of life, the domains of life, they don't resolve into a nice, neat Darwinian tree. They create this tangled thicket or a bush. But ID proponents would predict this kind of data. They would say that intelligent agents are not constrained to reuse parts that work in a pattern that necessarily mimics a nested hierarchy. Intelligent agents can reuse parts that work in distantly related organisms. And so ID would predict this kind of data, whereas Darwinian evolution has to appeal to sort of a backup explanation of lateral gene transfer to account for this data. And it gets pretty tricky sometimes because we see these kind of incongruities between phylogenetic data, not just at the base of the tree of life, where you can at least use lateral gene transfer to explain how microorganisms shared and swapped genes. But all the way through the tree of life, to the higher branches, we see these phylogenetic incongruities, even among organisms where we don't know that they're swapping genes all the time. This is a very significant quote from Carl Woese. He says that phylogenetic incongruities or conflicts can be seen everywhere in the universal tree, from its root to the major branches within and among the various taxa to the makeup of the primary groupings themselves. Very significant. ID would predict that you don't have to use genes in a pattern that necessarily resolves into a nice, neat Darwinian tree, that you would come up with these incongruities. Basically, one gene might lead to one version of the tree of life, and another gene might lead you to a different version of the tree of life, because intelligent agents aren't required to produce a pattern that resolves into just one universal tree of life. And by the way, all these guys are, of course, thoroughgoing, committed evolutionists, and they think that they can still, salvage common descent, but I would say that ID would predict the kind of problems they're running into, and that ID provides a more positive, elegant explanation for this data. A paper in Science in 2005 said that despite the amount of data and breadth of taxa analyzed, relationships among most metazoan phyla remain unresolved. A paper that came out about a year ago in the journal New Scientist was titled "Darwin Was Wrong About the Tree of Life." And it said that many biologists now argue that the tree concept is obsolete and needs to be discarded. We have no evidence at all that the tree of life is a reality. The problem was that different genes told contradictory evolutionary stories. We've just annihilated the tree of life. It's not a tree anymore. It's a different topology entirely. So again, these are all committed evolutionists. They think that they can salvage common descent. And I'll preempt an objection here by saying, yeah, they think that lateral gene transfer can explain these problems and the fact that genes are popping up in places where common descent would not predict. But there's a problem, because this article says this: more fundamentally, recent research suggests that the evolution of animals and plants isn't exactly tree-like either. So it's not just among microorganisms that we're seeing phylogenetic conflicts. We're seeing it all through the tree of life, even in areas where lateral gene transfer, horizontal gene transfer, are not thought to be prevalent or even necessarily occur at all. So I think that ID provides a very elegant explanation for why we see genes being reused in widely different organisms, regardless of whether it necessarily resolves to a nested hierarchy or not.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2010. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.